Hello everyone, I'm your host Una Meriläinen and today we will talk about the intersection between environmental responsibility and corporate accountability. We will delve deep into the pressing issue in the sustainable organizing field. What is the role of standards in the field of oil and gas? Before introducing you to our expert on sector standard for oil and gas from the Global Reporting Initiative, also known as GRI, let's take a quick look at the discussion surrounding oil and gas and the fossil fuel industry. The fossil fuel industry has long been a cornerstone of the global economy, but it also comes at a significant environmental cost. Climate change, environmental degradation, and social impacts are pressing concerns that demand our attention. As the global community grapples with the urgent need for sustainable practices and the imperative to transition away from fossil fuels, organizations like the GRI could play a pivotal role in setting the standards that guide industries towards a more sustainable future. Today, we'll be discussing how the GRI standards are shaping the conversation around these issues and influencing the path forward. We'll be unpacking the ways in which GRI standards encourage transparency, accountability, and the crucial shift towards renewable energy. We are delighted to welcome Noora Puro, Senior Manager at GRI, to the studio. Before we dive into the topic of today, could you briefly tell us a bit about yourself and how you ended up at GRI?
Thanks, Una, and very delighted to be here today with you to talk a little bit about our sector standards and reporting and how it can drive our sustainability goals. So, as you mentioned, I'm Senior Manager at GRI. I've been with GRI now for 7 years, so about as long as I have lived in the Netherlands. My background is in communications, actually. I studied English in the University of Helsinki, and upon graduation, I ended up working in a communications agency and in the corporate communications side especially. And one very critical part and a growing part at that point of corporate communications was sustainability reporting and sustainability communications. And that was a kind of a rabbit hole that sucked me in. And I knew that I wanted to do more of that. And upon moving to the Netherlands, I knew that GRI was based in Amsterdam and wanted to see what it would be like to work for that organization that I had so intensively been using in the reporting processes, developing sustainability reports for companies. So that's how I ended up working where I am now. And the past 5 years, indeed, I've been leading sector standards projects at GRI. So we started a separate program to develop sector standards in 2018. And our first project was the oil and gas sector standard that kicked off in 2019. And since then, I have led the work on the coal sector standard, GRI 12, and mining sector standard that was launched actually just a few weeks ago. So we have now the suite of extractive standards are also available for anyone to download.
That's really interesting. And I think it's also interesting how your kind of communications background also kind of relates to the GRI in a way that GRI actually helps companies to communicate their progress and their kind of way of operating. That's really interesting. But I think there might be some people listening to this that actually don't know what GRI is. So could you briefly describe what is actually GRI and what do you do at GRI to a kind of layperson that doesn't actually know GRI?
I will give my best shot. It's a difficult thing to do in a nutshell, but I think most people who are familiar with sustainability, they would be familiar with transparency and sustainability reporting. So GRI is one of the first organizations that started developing frameworks, developing some norms and guidelines around what needs to be transparently disclosed by companies and other organizations to showcase their contributions to sustainable development and how they adhere to responsible business practices. So GRI is an international and independent standard setter. So we don't have affiliations to corporate interests. We've been around for over a quarter of a century, and we've been developing indeed reporting or transparency standards to help all kinds of organizations to communicate their impacts, as you mentioned, on sustainable development, how they manage them, importantly. And the purpose of these standards is to enable organizations to discuss their most significant impacts on the economy, on the environment, and people, including their human rights, in a consistent way that is also credible. In this way, the standard creates a common language for organizations and their stakeholders to both assess key impacts and engage on these key impacts. So providing this a forum for and a baseline for what is expected of organizations when it comes to transparency. We're fully based on a multi-stakeholder governance, and our standard setting process always requires representation from our key constituencies, which are business organizations, civil society, labor, then these kinds of mediating institutions. So these can be academia or other standard setters or intergovernmental institutions. And the final one is investors. So all of these five stakeholder groups always need to be represented in our standards development process. And in the development process, we aim to seek consensus on the information needs, what needs to be published in the public domain on responsible business practice, contribution to sustainable development, on a given topic or by a given sector. But that's in a nutshell what we do and how we do it.
Great, thanks. So you did a bit, you already mentioned about the kind of impacts that companies have on human rights or other issues and also other stakeholders. But what would you see as the kind of benefits of these transparency standards and how about then the disadvantages of the standards?
So first of all, of course, they are a quite useful tool for companies themselves to assess whether they conform with the expectations and norms for responsible business conduct as set out by select authoritative instruments such as the United Nations Guiding Principles for Business and Human Rights, OECD guidelines, any ILO fundamental rights, all of which form the foundation of the GRI standards. So these are all incorporated into the expectations for reporting for companies. The reporting process can also be very useful in identifying risks in the business operations, for example, by guiding companies to conduct due diligence on their supply chain. So looking past their own operations, guiding to look at specific topics for a specific sector, where they're doing well, where things could still be improved. And of course, with the reporting, companies can signal by embracing an ambitious standard like the GRI, their leadership in transparent and sustainable practices. And then from an information user perspective, the standards are incredibly useful to engage companies on sustainability impacts. So one example from a fairly recent interaction I had with an investor representative, they are doing work on biodiversity and mining in Indonesia. And they were looking for a transparency standard that they can use to engage with companies, mining companies in Indonesia, to provide them a baseline that, you know, this is what we're looking at when we're assessing your performance. And that can, of course, then trigger and drive better practices and improve performance. In terms of the downsides, I would say greenwashing is probably the main one, the main criticism that that is associated with sustainability reporting. So if done disingenuously, a voluntary framework like GRI can be used for purposes that do not serve the public interest, but is used as marketing techniques. And that's why it's so important to call for third-party assurance of data, of sustainability reports, which will, for example, will be introduced by the European Sustainability Reporting Standards. So that will be one of the first very major legislative efforts to mandate the verification of the data that's being reported.
Great. Good to hear both sides of the coin, so to speak. You mentioned about kind of working together with a lot of different stakeholders in kind of the process of creating these standards. So how do you actually see that collaboration? Is it always like fluent, and do all of the stakeholders get to kind of say their say on these standards, or how do you see the process?
It's one of the key challenges in our work, but also the one that is probably the most rewarding aspect of the work. So if we look at the core working group with whom we develop these standards, so the GRI Secretariat, we take responsibility for the project management, for providing the framing and providing the platform for these experts to engage. But then the topic expertise comes from external stakeholders. And in each working group, we always have to have these five constituency groups represented. And for oil and gas and for the mining sector standard, we had close to 20 stakeholders in the working group, all of which, by the way, are working free of charge, so donating their time to contribute to this work. And it is not just one or two views that are opposing each other. It's sometimes three or four or five. You can reliably say that businesses and civil society are usually on the opposite ends of the spectrum. I mean, there's always very progressive business stakeholders who are in favor of more transparency and in favor of more disclosure. But many times you can say that those are the two often most extreme ends of the spectrum. But then there are the other stakeholders in between who might have a very specific interest and a very specific agenda that they're driving. It might be interest in biodiversity. It might be worker topics. If you think about, for example, labor unions, worker rights would be very strong on the agenda. But climate change, not necessarily, especially if a country's workforce is strongly rooted in fossil fuel sector and fossil fuel companies are providing a lot of employment. So there are sometimes these surprising distinctions. What we find extremely important in the work that we do is to bring everyone around the same table. So nothing takes place in a vacuum. Everything is out in the open, and people get to hear from each other, hear from their experiences. Civil societies can hear about the challenges that companies face when collecting the data or publishing the data. And at the same time, companies get to hear about the real life challenges that, for example, local communities are facing when adjacent to operations such as oil and gas or mining. So it's definitely a challenge, but stakeholders seem to be very appreciative of the opportunity and of the experience of airing everything out and getting to the point where we can put everything between two covers and say that this represents the consensus of a group that has such divergent views. It might mean that everyone's a little bit unhappy, but that means that we've succeeded in the job that we did. Because if one stakeholder group is very, very happy, that means that some other stakeholder group might be very unhappy. So we tried to find the golden mean there.
Right.
Sounds really interesting, and I think especially with oil and gas, probably because it's a really like sensitive topic to some, it might be hard to kind of find the common ground between different actors. But how do you actually, like, what are the forms of participation that you use to kind of make sure that everyone gets their voice heard and kind of also leaves the room kind of happy, or at least somewhat happy with the result?
So with the working group itself, so we engage quite intensively with them about 2 years. Usually a standards project takes about 2 years to finish, and we have many ways of engaging with them. Usually, because we also ensure global representation in the working groups, we most often organize virtual meetings, but try to have at least one, sometimes two, in-person meetings where we sit together for 2 days intensively discussing topics and reporting. So that is the main way of interacting and engaging with the working group. But at the same time, we produce a lot of drafts, a lot of background documents that we share with the group. And in an online platform, we give the opportunity for people to comment on them and for other people to see those comments and respond to them. So we keep that openness and transparency throughout the process. In addition, we also have these external peer review groups. So these are formed from topic or sector experts that may have a very niche expertise. So some might be only dealing with issues related to Indigenous peoples. So we keep them close by to the project. So wherever we need more engagement, more information, more views on a specific topic, we can pull these experts into the process. And usually at least once every project, we present the whole standard and the topics included in the standard for input and for feedback from the peer review. And then one very important phase in each standards project is the public comment phase. So every single standard goes through a public commenting period, which is usually a minimum of 60 days, up to 90 days. And in this period, we usually do some work in advance to identify whether there are stakeholder groups whose voices are less represented by this stage of the project. We might build the public comment strategy around, okay, we need more civil society voices. We need more voices from Latin America. And then we put efforts into being there, arranging workshops, having special communications campaigns, promotional campaigns directed at these stakeholder groups that are less represented. And then, yeah, that is a means for us to kind of amplify the exposure that that the contents have or get by different stakeholders in different regions.
That sounds really great, and it kind of sounds like you are trying your best to make sure that everyone actually gets to say what they have to say on the standard before it gets to the kind of final phases of publication.
Absolutely.
So if you think about now the oil and gas standard that you have been creating, can you like reflect a bit on, you were talking about kind of how do we actually engage all of the participants or stakeholders? So how did you see the progress kind of come into being in terms of the oil and gas standard?
It was a tricky project in the sense that it was the first pilot project. So we did not actually have a full picture of what a sector standard would look like once it's out there. So the working group that we formed around the oil and gas sector standard, they kind of had two jobs, both providing the expertise, the sector expertise for the content, but also to help us conceptualize what a sector standard should be doing. So that was one key challenge that we faced, but at the same time, I think it helped push the ambition level of what we originally wanted to do with the sector standards to a higher level, because we had a very ambitious working group, and that helped then form the kind of the blueprint and the baseline for future sector standards. In terms of the process, I would say what I would do differently is we started with a vision to create a standard for oil, gas, and coal. So it was supposed to be kind of a fossil fuel focused standard, whereas we ran into some political issues in the middle of the project and had to then separate coal and oil and gas to their own separate standards. So what we also realized quite quickly was that there's not a whole lot of ambition to create reporting standards for coal, because many people have kind of given up on coal, saying that that will be the first one to be phased out in the Paris Agreement, to achieve the Paris Agreement goals. But oil and gas is still very influential. It has different transition pathways. So there's more interest in pushing the bar of transparency for that sector. But that is something that I would probably do differently had I known this.
Yeah, that's good reflection. And I think what would also be interesting to hear is that if you think about the oil and gas standard that you then decided to separate from the coal standard, do you still see something there that you actually would have wished that came into being in the oil and gas standard, and something was left out and you would have actually wanted to see it in the standard?
I'm not sure if there's much that I feel strongly about. So climate change was, of course, the number one issue that probably took about 60% of the time of discussions within the working group. So just coming to terms with the fact that in order to be sustainable, an oil and gas company would ultimately need to go out of business, right? So what are you going to do to explore new business models, to move away from fossil fuels? Where are you channeling your investments? Is it congruent with your claims about focusing on green energy technologies? What is your lobbying expenditure? What are you lobbying on for or against climate legislation or regulation? So this topic was the center of our discussions, and most of these issues made it to the standard, which I was very happy to see, especially because GRI's topic standard on climate change is only now being revised. So there's a massive expansion of what we had previously covered related to climate change in the GRI standards. So we had to develop quite a lot of additional sector-specific reporting for the oil and gas standard. What I would have liked to see is a very tiny detail in the reporting on an oil and gas company strategy to be resilient, or to show how they are aiming for the Paris Agreement goals. We used the figure less than 2 degrees, while at that point already there was a new IPCC report calling for 1.5 degrees, how important it is to keep to that limit and how catastrophic it will be to go to 2 degrees. But this will luckily be, I'm assuming, will be corrected in the revised climate standards, which will be released by the end of this year.
Yeah, that's great to hear. I think if I would have had to choose something myself, I would have probably said the same thing, because I can see that all the time companies are being pushed towards a bit like more closer to the 1.5 degrees instead of well below 2 degrees.
Exactly.
So it's a really important topic, I believe. And maybe kind of on a tangent on that, I think that the oil and gas kind of industry is getting a lot of critique for it's kind of thought that it should actually be phased out really quickly. But obviously, we know that that might not be the kind of realistic scenario that we could do actually. So do you think that the GRI is kind of helping the oil and gas industry to move towards a more sustainable kind of future, or how do you see this critique?
I think it's definitely a critique that I've heard before, and one that I have debated myself. I think we heard that critique maybe a bit more with the coal standard, because of course oil and gas is still has relevance in other spheres like petrochemicals. It's not just for burning, for combustion. It is used for other purposes as well. That being said, 90% or something is of our CO2 emissions, carbon emissions can be traced back to fossil fuel combustion. So yes, very legitimate concerns. However, GRI reporting has never been and still isn't a stamp of approval or a license to operate for a company. It aims to provide transparency over the potential and actual impacts that are happening, and provide more information that can be used by stakeholders to demand better practices. And while oil and gas are still extracting these commodities, it's better to know how they're impacting the local communities, how they're impacting ecosystems while doing it, but at the same time, understanding how they're preparing and training their workers, for example, for phasing out or divesting their operations, whether the profits from these operations flow to the people, communities, countries where they belong to. So there's a whole range of data that we need to be able to assess where we are in the transition, what actions need to be taken by policymakers, by investors, NGOs, and others to drive change where it's most meaningful and where companies are most lagging. And as I mentioned earlier, issues related to like greenwashing, these types of things, we also try to tackle those in the reporting section. So if you look at the transition topic, climate transition topic, we have, for example, posed a question on the capital expenditure that a company is directing into, where the company is directing their capital expenditure. And one of the favorite talking points for some oil and gas companies is for example, carbon capture and storage. So asking a question about, well, tell us then how much carbon you have captured using these technologies. If you're talking about it, let's put a number on that speaking point and actually make an assessment whether it's a legitimate point or not. So these types of disclosures we can use to also decrease the possibility for greenwashing and be able to fact check claims better.
Yeah, and I think definitely having like reporting frameworks that support companies to not greenwash is super great. And I think that's what we're also seeing in the EU, that we are kind of being pushed more towards having like data behind our claims and actually being able to showcase what we're doing about the claims that we are making. But in terms of
we have the kind of voluntary reporting schemes, but then in terms of kind of making it mandatory for oil and gas companies to actually report on their sustainability initiatives or impacts or kind of governance structures, do you think that that would actually be something that we should be looking towards, or is it just pure utopia? What do you think?
I think it's around the corner. I think it's happening right now in the EU. It will affect 50,000 plus companies, the mandate to report on their non-financial information. So it's actually a really exciting moment and a moment that GRI has been working towards for the past 26-27 years. So the fact that major legislators are bringing sustainability reporting on the same footing as financial reporting is a major progress. Now we just heard that China is also introducing similar propositions to adopt double materiality lens to reporting and making it mandatory, which would be an enormous shift. So it's happening really quickly, and I think companies are feeling the pressure as well, and the expectations are also increasing. I mean, it was much easier 10 years ago for companies to kind of cherry pick topics, just only report those disclosure points that made them look good and stay away from the ones that were less favorable. But for example, what the sector standards do is that they give a very good indication on the topics that are likely to be material for most companies in a sector. And if a topic would not be material for a company that is listed in a sector standard, they will need to explain. They will need to give an explanation for why that is. So that also adds a layer of accountability. And when we talk about these high impact sectors, for oil and gas, we list 22 topics. For mining, we list 25, agriculture, 26. That covers a whole lot of sustainable development issues and should provide a pretty good image on where companies are in their journey.
Yeah, good to hear. So you mentioned this kind of path, what we are in the EU. So the CSRD is coming, and obviously that's making its own requirements for companies to report on more data points than they have previously had to report on. But if we think about the future in a maybe more holistic way, in terms of reporting, but also oil and gas companies in general, what do you see are the next steps towards a more sustainable world, and why?
Small question to end. Yeah. I mean, I think the mandatoriness of sustainability reporting is absolutely the way to go. And monitoring its robustness and to bring it to the level of scrutiny as financial information is currently, I think that would be, it remains to be seen what the consequences are in the CSRD, but I think that would be a major, major step forward. It really brings it from this mainly voluntary branding exercise to something that has real life consequences, that there are consequences for publishing incomplete or inaccurate or misleading information. It really brings a new perspective to reporting. And of course, on a broader level, this will hopefully help to induce a larger shift in our conception and consideration of what a business is supposed to do. What is its purpose? It's not solely to create value to its shareholders, but to the society as a whole, and to keep the environment also as a very important stakeholder. It's not just extraction. We can't keep externalizing all of our impacts. It's just not sustainable. But yeah, that's what we hope that sustainability also, sustainability reporting does, that particularly such that focuses on the outward impact and not the enterprise value, such as the ISSB and SASB standards. So they look at sustainability issues mostly from the perspective of what presents a risk to the enterprise value of a company. But this can help give a voice to affected groups and pushing companies to do less harm and do more good and really earn their place in the world in this way.
That's really a great way to end this discussion. And I think it's been really insightful, and it's been really fun to also learn about the standards. And I think what can be to some maybe a bit like a boring topic, the standards, like reporting, I think we have managed to make it quite interesting, actually, and talking about the topics that really make a difference in terms of the world and also the people that are affected by this company. So I really want to thank you on the really insightful discussion. And yes, thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity. It was really nice talking to you. And yeah, if you need any more information, just feel free to always get in touch.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. It was really interesting to listen to you, Noora, and Una did a good job. And great questions and great answers.